Welcome back to the Deep Dive. This is the place where we take a mountain of technical data and turn it into something you can actually use. And today, we have an incredible deep dive for you. It all starts with a problem that, well, you probably don't think about it much, but it costs the world economy billions, just stuff wearing out.
It sounds so simple, but it's not a minor annoyance. I mean, the economic cost of material degradation, especially wear and tear in heavy industry, it's truly staggering.
How staggering are we talking?
Well, our sources confirm that in large industrialized nations, this cost can chew up as much as 4% of the gross domestic product every single year.
4% of GDP just gone, wiped out because things rub together and break down.
And if you zoom in on the really high impact sectors, you know, mining, big construction projects, earth excavation, abrasion wear alone, that scraping and grinding is about 60% of those total losses.
Wow.
Yeah. And this isn't just about replacing a shovel, right? This is about massive downtime, huge maintenance costs for equipment that's supposed to handle incredible abuse.
That is just immense. So, of course, the industry has spent decades trying to develop tougher materials, and we've got an amazing stack of sources here. They all focus on one specific, really complex, almost chaotic environment called impact abrasion, and a revolutionary new high-strength steel that was designed to survive it.
So our mission today is to really get to the bottom of this fundamental trade-off, the one that determines whether a material succeeds or fails in these extreme environments. You see, historically, steel performance was measured by, well, just one simple metric, hardness, high bulk hardness.
Right.
So we have to ask, is hardness still the king? Or does another more nuanced property fracture toughness become absolutely essential when you start throwing brutal, repeated impacts into the mix?
Okay, let's unpack this. We are going deep into metallurgy to show you why a steel that is technically, you know, softer on paper can actually be way tougher and last far longer in the field. It really challenges everything we thought we knew. All right, let's start with the basics. For you, our listener, let's define wear.
Fundamentally, it's just the unwanted removal of material from a surface, right? When it moves against something else.
Exactly. It happens every time you use your car brakes or even just walk on the sidewalk. But when you scale that up to an industrial level, it's catastrophic.
And for decades, the industry's go-to fix for abrasion was, it was really straightforward.
Oh, absolutely. Just make it harder.
Make it harder.
Steels designed for wear resistance, you know, commercial grades that are often marketed by their Brinell hardness number, things like Hardox 400, they get that extreme strength mainly through heat treatment, a process called martensitic transformation.
Which is really just a fancy way of saying they cool the steel down super fast to lock in this really rigid, really strong internal structure. Precisely. And if all you're dealing with is simple scraping, say, fine-grained sand rubbing against the surface, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, intuitively, if the material is harder, the abrasive can't scratch it as easily.
And that intuition holds up, but only to a point. What's so fascinating is that study after study shows where resistance doesn't just keep going up and up with hardness. Once you push past a certain threshold, maybe around 500 on the Vickers hardness scale.
And for reference, that's getting close to the hardness of some industrial ceramics.
Right. Once you get up there, the benefit just flattens out.
Why, though? Why does that ceiling exist? Why can't we just keep making it harder and get better results?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the way the material fails, it fundamentally changes. Once a steel is that rigid, that hard, its natural ability to work hardened under stress just, it plummets.
So it can't deform a little bit to absorb the energy.
Exactly. Instead of allowing for that slight plastic deformation, that internal rearrangement, the material just becomes brittle.
And when it's brittle, the failure mode shifts from that simple surface scratching, what you called microcutting,
to sudden violent fragmentation.
Wow.
The material is so stiff, it literally can't absorb the kinetic energy.
Mm.
And that brittleness, it gets exposed immediately in the real world when you combine simple abrasion with high energy impacts.
And that's the complex where we mentioned the impact abrasion.
That's it. Think about the liner of a huge tipper truck carrying crushed granite. When the rocks are loaded, they hit the liner with immense force. That's the impact.
And when the truck dumps, the load scrapes all the way out. That's the abrasion.
It's chaos. Those abrasive particles hit the surface from every angle, at all different speeds and stresses. You need a material that can resist the scratch, but also, you know, absorb that kinetic punch without just cracking.
So if pure hardness isn't the answer, we need a better formula, a more nuanced one.
Exactly. Our sources really stress this. You have to optimize a whole basket of properties, not just maximum stiffness.
And this is where fracture toughness comes in.
Yes. Fracture toughness is all about measuring a material's resistance to crack growth under stress. And it's so critical because in these high-impact situations, failure isn't from a surface scratch. It's because a tiny crack starts, and the material has no ability to stop it from spreading.
And the novel steel in these studies, it's a huge leap forward because it delivers both high strength and exceptional toughness at the same time.
It's a medium carbon steel, about 0.34% carbon, but it's heavily alloyed with these, well, expensive but very tough elements like nickel over 3.5% and chromium at 1.5%, plus some molybdenum and vanadium.
But the real genius here isn't just the recipe, it's the cooking process.
Exactly. It was put through this severe thermomechanical processing hot rolling, which created an incredibly refined martensite structure.
Okay, let's break down that jargon for you. When you say the structure was refined and the austenite grains were pancaked, what are we talking about in simple terms?
So think of the steel's internal crystals, its grains. In most steels, they're kind of blocky. But with this special rolling process, they flatten them into these extremely thin stacked layers, like extreme pancakes.
Okay.
And that fine, elongated grain structure is crucial. It acts like internal armor. Any crack that tries to grow is forced to constantly change direction, to jump across boundaries. That's the source of its incredible toughness.
And the final numbers on this rolled steel, what did they get?
The hardness was very respectable, 561 Vickers. But critically, it paired that with this outstanding fracture toughness of 72 megapascal square root meters.
And the tensile strength was huge, 2 gigapascal.
2 gigapascals. To put that perspective for you, that's roughly twice the strength of the high-quality structural steel they use in skyscrapers. This stuff was tough and strong.
Now for the really clever part of this whole research design. To prove that toughness was the real difference maker, not just the hardness or the chemistry, they had to isolate it.
Correct. So they took a batch of that exact same steel, same recipe, but gave it a totally different heat treatment. They re-austenitized it at 900 degrees Celsius and then just immediately quenched it in water.
And that process deliberately destroyed that special pancaked microstructure.
Completely. It resulted in an embrittled variant.
And here's where it gets really interesting for you, the listener. We now have two identical twins, chemically. The original rolled steel is super tough, but a bit softer.
And this new quenched steel, because its fine structure was gone, was actually harder. It measured 666 Vickers.
But it had massively lower toughness. It was brittle. It just snapped in tests with almost no plastic deformation.
So there we had it, our two test materials. A harder, more brittle specimen pitted directly against a softer, much more damage-tolerant one.
So how do you test these two against the kind of chaos you'd find in a quarry? You use something called the impeller tumbler test. It sounds medieval.
It is brutal. I mean, this test is designed specifically to replicate complex wear. You take these large, hard granite abrasives, think rocks about 10 to 12 millimeters in size, and put them in a rotating drum.
Okay.
Then a high-speed impeller shaft spins the metal samples right through that storm of rocks, creating just chaotic collisions. High-speed video shows the impact-to-abrasion ratio is roughly 100 to 1. It is a severe impact-dominated environment.
So what happened? When the tough rolled steel faced off against its harder, brittle twin, the quenched steel, what were the results?
The finding was definitive. It completely validated their hypothesis. The high-toughness, hot-rolled steel significantly outperformed the harder, brittle, quenched steel.
How significantly?
The tough steel showed 17% less relative wear loss.
17% less mass lost in that chaotic environment simply because of its internal structure, its toughness, even though it's technically softer to start with.
Right. And on top of that, the rolled steel at 561 HV even performed better than a commercial reference steel, R500, which was at 515 HV.
So that really proves it. When you're dealing with chaotic impact abrasion, superior fracture toughness becomes the dominant factor. It can actually override a slightly higher bulk hardness.
It absolutely does.
So if the material isn't shattering into pieces, what is it doing instead? I assume this is all visible at the microscopic level.
Oh, absolutely. When they looked at the failure modes, the difference was, well, it was night and day. The quenched brittle samples showed classic brittle behavior.
Meaning?
The impacts created these wide cracks and multiple cracks that ran deep below the surface. The average crater depth from an impact was about 15.8 micrometers. That's deep material removal.
And the tough steel.
The high toughness rolled steel, it essentially refused to let the cracks propagate. Instead of cracking, it consumed the kinetic energy by deforming. it formed these protective lips of material around the impact site.
Ah, so that deformation absorbs the energy that would otherwise cause a catastrophic crack.
Mm. Precisely. And the craters in the tough material were much shallower, too, only about 7.5 micrometers deep on average. The material contained the damage and minimized the mass loss.
The ability of that tough steel to deform its ductility, that points to another really critical mechanism here, right? Work hardening.
Yes, that's the other side of the coin.
That's where the steel actually gets harder while you're using it.
Exactly. The steel might start at 561 Vickers, but because it has this inherent capacity to work harden, during that impeller tumbler test, the hardness right there on the surface in the contact zone, it increases dramatically.
And that localized surface hardening is vital for resisting the abrasion that comes after the initial impact.
It's critical. So the material is essentially fighting back. It's using the stress to strengthen itself.
What did the deeper subsurface analysis show about this?
The cross-sectional microscopy showed that wear happens in two stages. First, compacts create cracks and damage. Then the abrasion comes along and just scrapes away that all refractured material. In the tough steel, the immediate friction layer on the surface was supported by a thicker, highly effective deformation layer underneath. That's the work-hardened zone.
So that thicker deformation layer acts like a natural cushion, a shock absorber.
Precisely. And that provided much better overall resistance. So as a result, the crack density caused by all those repeated impacts was just much, much lower in the tough steel compared to the brittle one. It just takes more hits to start a failure.
You mentioned an interesting side effect with the granite itself. What happens to the rocks in all this?
That's a great question. One of the most fascinating observations was that little particles of granite actually get embedded in the steel surface during the collisions.
Really? They get stuck in there?
Especially in the more ductile steel. It was twice as pronounced in the tough rolled steel compared to the brittle quenched steel.
So the steel is tough enough and ductile enough to physically absorb chunks of the abrasive material into its own surface.
It is. Now, while this can briefly help resistance, it's like an improvised metal matrix composite, those particles aren't stable.
I was going to say, that can't be good long term.
No. They eventually detach, and they leave behind these little microvoids that then contribute to the overall damage. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword, but the overall damage tolerance still kept the tough steel way ahead.
Okay, so the impeller tumbler test proved that toughness is key when impact is high. But what if we go back to that old wisdom, hardness is king? What happens if you take impact completely out of the equation?
That's where you use the standard three-body abrasion test. It's called the dry sand rubber wheel test. And it simulates pure, sustained sliding and rolling abrasion. There's no impact component.
And here, the results just flip right back, didn't they? It reinforced that traditional view.
They did. Under conditions of pure abrasion, that toughness parameter, it really didn't play much of a role. All the variants, the tuck-rolled steel and the brittle-quenched one, they performed pretty similarly.
And how did they compare to the commercial stuff?
They all performed poorly compared to commercial abrasion steels like Fardox 500, which has been optimized for decades purely for that kind of scratching action.
So if you're designing something that will only ever scrape against fine particles, hardness is still the winner.
It is.
But what's the bigger lesson here? What should we take away from this stark contrast between the two test environments?
The core lesson, really, is that wear is fundamentally a system property. It is not an intrinsic material property. You can't just say a material is wear resistant.
You have to be more specific.
You have to say it's wear resistant within a specific tribosystem. The dominant factor shifts entirely based on whether that system involves pure abrasion or, you know, includes impact.
Give me an example of just how sensitive it is to the system.
The most remarkable one came from that abrasion test itself. The specific wear rate for all the steel samples shot up by 40 to 50% just by switching the batch of sand they were using.
Wait, seriously? Just changing the sand supplier caused nearly 50% more wear?
Yes. The researchers figured out the main difference was particle size. Sand B had a grit size about 100 micrometers larger than Sand A. It just confirms how sensitive the wear outcome is, not just to the steel, but to the size, shape, and velocity of the abrasive itself. So at the end of the day, hardness dominates pure scratching, but toughness is the non-negotiable insurance policy when severe, chaotic impact enters the picture.
And this shift in understanding from just chasing maximum hardness to optimizing for toughness, it has massive commercial implications.
Huge.
Our sources detail a real-world component test. They took the new rolled steel and put it up against an existing hard-faced composite plate that was being used in a steel plant chute.
Right, and that existing component was the gold standard, an extremely hard solution rated around 700 Vickers. They achieved that by welding a specialized hard coating onto a base plate.
But the lab tests, the impact tumbler tests, they showed the new rolled steel, even though it was significantly softer at 561 HV.
Performed identically in terms of mass loss to that 700 VHN hard-faced material.
So they matched the performance of a high-cost, high-complexity material with a standard rolled steel plate. I mean, that means the rolled steel is cheaper to make, it's easier to handle.
And it offers uniform wear. That's the value proposition. It's more economical because you get rid of that whole cumbersome hard-facing welding process.
Right.
And think about in the field. If that hard-facing layer gets worn away, the softer base steel underneath is suddenly exposed. And that leads to rapid catastrophic failure.
Whereas the new homogeneous rolled steel wears down evenly across the entire life of the component.
Exactly.
So this research, it's basically created a product that solves a huge economic pain point. How to get, say, 5-year longevity out of a component without the immense cost and complexity of surface hardening.
It has. So the challenge is now, they kind of shift to standardization. The industry needs to formalize tests for this complex wear, you know, validate the impeller tumbler test, and also advance research into practical things like weldability.
And I imagine trying to reduce the need for those long, expensive field trials.
Critically. That's where better computer modeling comes in, like the discrete element method, or DEM. It can simulate millions of particle interactions to predict forces and wear patterns before you even cut a single piece of steel.
So let's summarize the big picture for you. You now know that when industrial materials get hit over and over by large, chaotic abrasives, strength is great, but resilience, that ability to deform and absorb energy without shattering, that is the real key to lasting performance.
It's a fundamental lesson in engineering, isn't it?
Mm.
Sometimes the answer isn't to create the absolute hardest, stiffest thing possible, but the most damage-tolerant one, the one that can actually endure the complex reality of a chaotic environment.
And consider the long-term economic implications here. Mm. If this new material can successfully replace a hard-faced composite that typically lasts 5 years, think about how much maintenance time, labor, and downtime is eliminated across the globe.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of innovation doesn't just save money on the material itself. It transforms industry efficiency. It could potentially make a real dent in that 4% GDP loss figure we started with.
Better toughness translates directly into fewer shutdowns and a much longer service life.
We'll leave you to mull over the power of the pancake structure.